I see it all the time. Is, you know, you'll see people in the biz op space right now. I'll show you how to start a seven figure business. That's not the 4 minute mile for most people. That's the, you know, 2 minute mile. Really, the biggest thing I see with most of the people is they're really disillusioned from how they perceive online business as easy.
You know, I run a large Facebook group, and I get questions all the time about how do I write a prompt that will let me sell AI consulting services to people? And I'm like, whoa, stop. If you don't know how to even write a prompt, that's a problem. And if you actually think a single prompt can help you provide AI consulting services, whoa, this is not the money tree in the backyard. We haven't achieved that. That's not how it works.
I think anytime you make something easier, it allows the people to have more flexible morals. You know, we're doing a, you know, concentration and entrepreneurship. The professor's never been a freaking entrepreneur. If you're trying to grow your personal brand or your business or your movement or whatever it is, you have to hop up on a soapbox and start throwing rocks. You can hop on that same soapbox and point the way you want them to go.
Hi, and welcome to the 91 Day AI Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Mast, and I am really excited today. I've got Josh Brown with me, and actually, full disclosure, this is the second time Josh and I have done a podcast together. The first one, I lost, and I don't know what happened to it. So despite our best intentions, and Josh is just an incredible guest, and I'm so looking forward to having a conversation, because that was actually a couple months ago, and Josh is like, what happened? And I'm like, good question. So the reality, if you guys are doing podcasts, those things happen. Josh, you've been an incredibly gracious guy to get back on with me again and re-record. For those that maybe aren't as familiar with you and what you've been doing with some of your stuff, can you share a little bit about Josh Brown and who it is you serve?
Well, I'm so pleased to come back and do this because, you know, stuff happens online. And that's the thing, you got to like go into this whole online business and everything else with some humor and just like go, hey, something, it got somewhere in the ether of online, it just evaporated and it happened. So I'm happy to share with it. And, you know, I love chatting with somebody else who's just as passionate about their circle of genius as I am. And, you know, my audience that I deal with are those who are true experts who are trying to impact a larger audience by bringing their knowledge online and do it in an ethical way. So they're rewarded for their knowledge and they also are able to empower their audience to use that knowowledge. And this is a big separation from a lot of, you know, some of the how to make a course gurus. We put an equal emphasis on your knowledge is valuable. Don't give every ounce of it away, because if you don't invest in something, you aren't actually going to probably actually do anything with it. That's why colleges and everybody else charges tuition, because you aren't
going to. Absolutely.
Don't have a skin in the game. But also that with people who use that knowledge and implement, finish, and use it, guess what? They buy more of your stuff and you fulfill your promise to them. That's the line in the sand we follow.
I love that. Talk to us, how do you help them help their audience? I know I've been talking to a lot of people lately about, again, especially coaches, about getting them in front of the right audience, getting them to help. They've got, as you mentioned, their circle of genius. And everybody has, in my opinion, has their circle of genius. But how do you help them, one, identify maybe what that is and get in front of their audience and share? Because to me, when you identify what that circle of genius is and you can add tremendous value to others, I almost see it as an obligation that you should have to try to do that. How do you do that? Talk to us a little bit about how you do that with people.
Well, one of the things we found is that the best people in the world for getting that knowledge out there and having the biggest bucket of contribution are those that actually have the biggest trouble filtering what's the most important stuff to get that person moving. You know, it's sort of like, you know, if you have somebody who's brand new in the game and wants to monetize their knowledge, the thing is that they don't have that big of an inventory of stuff to go through. They don't have as many tricks. They don't have as many tactics. All of those things. And that's why a lot of times people that are like bigger influencer type gurus and things like that have the most problem in actually getting results, is they don't have any way of filtering what's the least amount of info I can give this person to get the desired outcome. And that's where we start all the time, is go, okay, let's reverse engineer this. What's the outcome your people want? Okay. Where is your ideal audience starting? Because not everybody's starting at brand new. Like, you might be serving. Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing I love about your content, is that you spread out a lot of times. This is a new person content. This is an experienced person content. Is this product for brand newbies? Where are they coming in? Now, let's set expectations in between those. And what's mandatory for them to get to that result? And what's if you have a really high performer, what's some bonus content to keep them inspired? And that's how we lay out everything. But we also foreshadow where they can go next on that. That's literally the game in a nutshell on getting results for your knowledge, is that swath. If you do that, you're ahead of 99% of people who get in this game.
Well, I love the way you talk about simplifying it. As you know, I've been going through this exact process for the last year and a half myself, building up, building a tribe, so to speak, building a community, trying to add value to them on the AI side. And thankfully, I'm blessed. It's went really well. But I know one of the things that I get from feedback all the time, and you just refer to what you mentioned, is you always ask people, what was the benefit you got? And so often it was simple. It was easy. It wasn't overly complicated. And they talk about how, you know, they heard another speaker, or they took another course or whatever, and it was just so much and it was so overwhelming. And many topics can be that way. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I love your concept of focusing on what's the minimum I need to teach them in order to achieve the objective, as opposed to how can I literally barf all over them with everything that I know.
Yep.
And not provide that value at the end of the day. So I love how you focus on that. You mentioned a little bit, Josh, how you also help coaches and speakers and influencers, how you help them look forward into the next steps as to what they can do. Why is that important for your audience, and why does that matter to be able to look ahead like that?
Well, the biggest thing is that you have to have the ability to give somebody a goal on where to go. And ultimately, if you don't give them some place to evolve to and to strive to, they're not likely to move forward. And if you're setting reasonable expectations, asking and they achieve it, to jump to that next level of expectation is way easier to get them to be able to take that journey with you. I see it all the time. You'll see people in the biz op space right now. You know, I'll show you how to start a seven-figure business.
Everybody talks about that.
That's not the 4-minute mile for most people. That's the, 2-minute mile.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They want to go there, but it's so hard to be unachievable. It's like, most of those people are like, I just want to get out of my 9-to-5. If I have a solid 5 figures, I'm there. And that's like, well, hey, I helped you get to that 5 figures. It wasn't as brutal and hard as you thought. Why don't we try it next time? Let's go to that 7 figures. Let's go to that generational section now. Okay, now that's you prove to them you can get them to that first expectation. Doesn't mean you're not going to help them get to that bigger goal. It just means that, hey, I gave a little, it worked, now let's go to that next piece. It's like, does that person want to, use AI to write an entire long book, or they just want to, not have crappy emails first?
I love that. Yeah, no, I love that.
It's probably the first one. Hold on, my emails are kind of fire now. I can probably write stuff. Yeah, let's write a book. Let's write a short book now. Okay, we can do that piece now. It's just so much more able to get them invested and be willing to take those bigger leaps if you're able to achieve that outcome at the beginning.
One, I love your small step process because to me that makes, and I see it with AI all the time, people are so overwhelmed, they don't know where to begin, they don't know what to do, and like you just mentioned, a lot of times I'm like, let's start with email. Did you have to write any? Do you have to write some email today that you're maybe not sure exactly how to write, or that you're going to reread four times to make sure it says just the right thing? How about we use ChatGPT to help you write that better?
Yeah,
and that's simple. It's easy. It takes just a couple of minutes, and in most cases, the response was, "Oh my, that's a lot better."
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and therefore, then they get excited, and then they're talking about, okay, how about I've got to write a memo? Could I have it help me write a memo? Sure, it can help you write a memo. Maybe I need to create an SOP. Well, we can do that. The book part, I mean, my goodness, that's way down the road in my mind, because if I start with that book, I now need to explain to them, well, first of all, it's not as simple as you hope, because AI is not an easy button. It's an easier button. So we can't write a prompt and say, I want to write a best-selling book about AI prompts, and get anything that anybody's going to see any value in. It's just not possible.
Yep.
But I find so many people come in with that. So I love your analogy there, because to me that makes it resonates so clearly and makes sense. What do you see is
it's huge.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. I 100% agree with you. Is, you know, you got to get them doing a jog before you get them to start running. You know, ultimately the whole game in a bucket, no matter what you're teaching.
What do you see as the biggest stumbling block that most of your clients struggle with when it comes to that? Is there any particular thing, either mentally or just accepting that they struggle with? Where do you see them struggling, and as you start working with them on that process?
Really, the biggest thing I see with most of the people is they're really disillusioned from how they perceive online business as easy. And compared to buying a building, doing a stand-up, stocking with inventory, hiring people, everything else, online is exponentially easier.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Easier, you know, and but they look at from the 3,000 foot view of some people online, and they realize that they're trying to run somebody else's race, which I have no idea why today I'm stuck on running analogies. Because as you
that's
can
okay.
tell,
that's okay. That's okay. As long as you don't ask me to do
really
it, we're good.
Runner, but everybody can attest to it. Everybody at some point has probably tried it. But ultimately, the thing is that run your own race, and that's really the gold standard you should set. You know, you know, to have some more free time? Is it to empower people? You know, is it to stop looking at the price on the menu, you know, every time you go out? Like, what is it? And run your own race to that finish line. Doesn't mean you can't create another one later. And also, the biggest thing I see people doing is they naturally will want to gravitate to the thing that they really enjoy, in not paying attention to those other pieces. Like, I'll give you a full disclosure thing for me. You just mentioned it with emails, and the reason why I love AI for this. I'm formerly an academic writer. I was a curriculum developer for the state of Virginia. I have all the way up to PhD hours in education. I write I use very large words, not great for marketing stuff. Like, I threw one of the emails I wrote in Hemingway. It was like four or five paragraphs, and it said like 95% of it was hard to read because I was using way too big words. Hemingway was not happy with me. You know, it's like, okay, let's reduce it down. So I don't like to do that. But I realized, I'm like, okay, I have thousands of people on my email list. I should probably do something about that. I didn't naturally gravitate towards that.
Sure.
So,
sure.
But it's a necessary part of business. So that's where I see a lot of people. You know, you have some people that want to take and do social posts. They love just doing those quick videos and stuff. You have other people that they love the community part of it and, you know, engaging with people and talking and all those things. But all of them are equally as important. So you have to, like, force yourself to do those other pieces. And it's also one of those things of being able to adapt on the fly when you realize something isn't working, because it's don't let the other parts of your business suffer in speed. Make the call right away. Like, those are the two biggest things I see people do, and they realize their business is suffering.
Mm. So good. So good. I love, there's so many thoughts that are going through my mind as you talk about that. How do you see, with what you're doing in the coaching and the guidance that you give, how do you see AI fitting into that? Obviously, when we first began talking, you know, about, I think it was a little over a year ago, Josh, you know, when you and I met for the first time, AI was on the scene, but it wasn't as ubiquitous as it has really become. How does that fit in with what you're doing with your clients now? And is it relevant to your clients?
Yeah, that's the real, one of the things for me that I've had a real dilemma with using AI is I see so many people using it without ethics. And, you know, I see so many people posting stuff about, you know, how to use these magic prompts to write, do a course on this and that and the other thing. And it's like, but do you actually have a background in that? You know, do you have the experience to say, I'm an expert, I wrote a course, here you go. Like, I could go on to ChatGTP and create prompts and get feedback and ultimately go through it and say, I'm building a course on how to program in Python. All I know is there's a programming language called Python.
You and I are in the same boat.
Yep. And I use this because I only know a handful of people in the world who know actually anything about it. And I could technically build one. Here's the problem. They're not now the expert. They're just a facilitator. They're just reading the information on camera and sending it out. Yeah. And that's where I have some ethical dilemmas with it. I think things like ChatGPT, Claude, whatever you're using, is the best research assistant for you to help you add to what you're doing and act as a filter. And then you can add on to your knowledge. But if you're going and marketing under the principle that I'm an expert, buy my course, but you aren't, you're a snake oil salesman or saleswoman.
Oh, I love what you're saying. And you know, I run a large Facebook group and I get questions all the time about how do I write a prompt that will let me sell AI consulting services to people? And I'm like, whoa, 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 stop.
Are you one?
If you don't know how to even write a prompt, that's a problem. And if you actually think a single prompt can help you provide AI consulting services, whoa, 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 we're in the, this is not the money tree in the backyard. We haven't achieved that. That's not how it works. I'd love to get your feedback. I often use the phrase that I love AI because to me, it's a tool that amplifies skill and experience. Now, that means I can take somebody that has very little experience, you and me with Python, for example, and I could probably get us to a level one or a level two because on a scale of 1 to 10, because sure, we can learn from AI and we could become an expert, but it would take time and energy. And of course, that's what I see so many people don't want to put in. You talked earlier about the, you know, so many people in the business development selling the seven, let me get you to seven figures. They're the same people that went in, you know, walked past a fancy restaurant and leaned on somebody's Lamborghini for just a minute to take a picture of it, even though it's not theirs. You know, I actually know somebody that literally went out to an executive airport and paid one of the people on the airport like a couple hundred bucks to be able to take a picture in front of somebody's jet, you know, Gulfstream or whatever. And to me, it's the same type of thing as those 100%. Snake oil salesmen. It's the, oh, well, I could do this. I mean, that'd be like me writing a course on how to be a cardiologist. I don't know anything about hearts or anything else other than I have one. And thankfully, it beats all day, every day.
Yep.
But I could use AI, I'm sure, to create something about being a cardiologist. It wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't be very helpful. But I could do that. But it would never compare, go back to your example, to the Python developer who now used AI to help put their thoughts in order and create a really great course because they were already maybe at an 8. And it, with amplifying it, instead of going from a 0 to a 2, they're going to go from an 8 to like a 40 because AI is going to amplify what their skill and experience. Yes. I'd love your thoughts on that, Josh. Do you see that similarly, differently? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and it's actually one of the things I'm seeing trend right now is people have gotten savvy to the rented the Lambo for a couple of hours and
yep.
hung out, you know, paid some dude to stand in front of it, or even the one that gets me now is there's several all over the country where they have decommissioned planes that you can make it look like you're sitting inside, you know, your G6 private plane or whatever, and just to get the shots. And I'm like, okay, this is like snake oil salesman 101 on these things. A buddy and I actually did an ad campaign totally throwing those guys under the bus because, like, it's you know, people who do that, I'm just like, ugh, just so scammy. But
it's like the guys that pay $30,000 to get an article in Forbes or a big magazine like that, and it's just a paid ad is all it is. You know, it's like, come on, at least be candid about what you're doing here, guys.
Exactly. And what I'm seeing now as a trend is people are more savvy. So what do? They do a little more research. And that's where I'm seeing so many people that are niche experts who, even a couple of years ago, it was hard to get above the noise.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, hold on. Like, I have most of the people when they come to me, one of the things they specifically say is, hold on, you were a professional educator for decades and you've worked with these mega huge influencer people. Okay, you're the right person. Not because I flashed some stripe. Look how much money I made. You know,
right, exactly.
Like, which the FTC has helped put a kibosh on that, because that was not, I never thought that was a good thing ever. Is
you and I both.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, particularly those of us who've been around the sun a few more times than, you know, some of the people out there, is that immediately reeked of desperation. Mm-hmm. And all of us know, okay, well, that was on the top line. What was the bottom line looking like?
Yeah.
That immediately was, I was like, huh, you gotta, whoo-hoo. Because I've seen inside of some of these businesses, and I'm like, whoa, you took in that, but you only made that? I mean, that's not good. The dude working at 7-Eleven made more than you. Like, what's going on? Like,
I know exactly what you mean. There's an author out there that I actually like. The guy, he's a super guy, but he talks about when he runs ads, how much money he makes off the ads. And I'm like, but that's only one part of the discussion. And I'm not saying that he's lying. I'm not. He's probably being very honest. I know him. I think he's being very, very candid. But he leaves off that ever important part that you managed. You know, I can sell millions of dollars of stuff if I do it at a loss. But, you know, you may not be old enough to remember. I am. I remember during the dot-com boom, you know, there was a company called Buy.com. And the CEO got on and said, we're going to make our money because we're going to lose less than everybody else on every sale. And I'm like, whoa, stop. You still, if you lose on every sale, you're still going to lose money. That means you can't run your business. And sure enough, after about a year and a half of some amazing deals, and I bought a lot of them back then, because they were selling stuff under cost, thinking they were going to make it up. And it's the same type of thing to me. It's like, okay, if I want to sell a Rolex watch, and I don't wear watches, but let's say it's a $15,000 watch, and probably that's a cheap Rolex, I don't know. But I sell that Rolex watch for $5,000, I can generate $1 million in sales really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is, if I'm losing $10,000 a piece, it doesn't matter if I did $20 million in sales, because that meant I lost $40 million in the long run, probably. And so that's where I think that's what you're referring to. And I see that happening so much. Like you said, probably a little less than it used to be. But it's interesting to see that. Question for you on that, since we're kind of on ethics, and I admit I'm one of those guys that doesn't really get into AI ethics, because I don't believe AI necessarily creates a new ethical dilemma for us. You either had ethics and you understand it, or you didn't have ethics and now AI is another tool for you to be anti-ethical with. But that's just my two cents. I'd love your thoughts on, do you see anything with AI that's causing for coaches, consultants, business people that requires us, or that should require us, to maybe take a better look at it from an ethical perspective?
I think one of the biggest things, and I agree, I don't think it, because ultimately a thing is, in reality, AI is just a really mass in, I will say AI in the scope of what we're talking about. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, Elon and his new, you know, humanoid bots and stuff like that. I'm talking about in the scope of, using it for business and marketing research and, you know, flow of your business and all of those things is, I don't think it creates a new ethics. I 100% agree with you with that. I just think it, people need to be educated on how it works.
Yes.
And why they need to be more prudent in the way they operate. Because, for example, you know, it's just the same. If I took and don't know about anything, and I asked ChatGTP to make me a guide on whatever, and then I market it and sell it, that, but I don't have any background in it. I'm using, you know, some creative marketing to say I do, you know.
Sure.
And that right there is the same ethical dilemma as if I went on YouTube, watched a couple hundred hours of YouTube to learn it, and then said, look, I know how to do this. I watched YouTube videos. Haven't done it, but I watched a lot of YouTube videos and I read some books. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It was the same dilemma before AI of people who were, you know, just regurgitating information, which, you know, the academic world has done that, except the big thing. It's synthesized. It's bringing it all together and then extrapolating your own view and citing where you got the ideas from. That's the missing piece a lot of people have. And like, for example, when I use, which you're way more of a master of AI than I am, and I'd love your feedback on this, is I, when I'm asking for validation and things like that, in my, when I get things to use in my own work, I ask it to cite the sources so I can include those with it. Like, oh, this bit of data saying that somebody X percent can do this was cited from Forbes.
Exactly. Cool.
Okay, now I'm doing the same thing people have done for hundreds of years, cite their sources. I just used it as a research assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way.
I think that's, yeah, I think that's a fantastic use for it. And I think it's good. I want to caution people, though, even then, you've still sometimes got to go visit that link and make sure that the link that ChatGPT gives you has the information, because I've not all the time, but I've had it literally cite a source for me. And then when you go look at it, you go, well, that article didn't say anything about 63% of the people believe this. It just cited it. So, you know, to me, it's a trust but verify situation. In other words, I'm not paranoid about it, but yeah, we're going to validate these facts and make sure that they're true. And I think, you know, to me, and this may be a rabbit hole we don't want to go down, but I'd be curious. You know, we talk about people saying that they're going to be an expert and therefore because they know a little bit about it. And I'm going to pick on higher education for a minute, and bear with me if you're in higher education. But to me, it reminds me what higher education has done on occasion, where they have a professor or a teacher that leaves and they go, oh crap, we've got this course we need to fill. They oftentimes don't care who fills that as long as it's somebody that can follow the curriculum. In other words, here, we're going to give you the curriculum, Josh. You don't need to know anything about this. Just read the curriculum and we're still going to be comfortable charging people. I've always thought that was, candidly, as big a sham as what we see other people doing. And I know you've got a background in education, so I'm not going to ask you to necessarily chime in if you don't want to. But I'm curious, because that thought never came to mind until literally just a minute ago as you were chatting. Do you see that, again, the problem we have there when it comes is AI simply makes it easier to maybe bypass our ethics than it was in the past? And maybe that's the real issue that people should be talking about.
Yeah, I think anytime you make something easier, it allows the people to have more flexible morals. And, you know, it's one of those things, just like, you know, like we're seeing with online bullying and things like that. It's like, why do people bullying more? Well, because they can literally go on their phone, type something, hit send, and then that's it, because it's easier. You know, like I actually had a conversation with and I'll circle back to the academic one, is, you know, it's like, why is online bullying gone up? Because like when you and I were kids, if you bullied somebody, you had to stand in front of them and say something to them. And there was
risk getting punched.
Yeah, exactly. And you had the high probability of somebody busting your nose or knocking your teeth out.
Yeah.
It kept a lot of that down. And, with, you know, academia and putting, you know, things like graduate assistants in there that all of a sudden are acting as professors. Professor shows up at the beginning of the semester, end of the semester, and then they're out. I think that's total crap. And I've been in academic settings before. I've instructed at that level, and I always had that as a big ethical dilemma. And also, I think it even can be a larger scope of, you know, you got these colleges, you know, oh, take a course, you know, we're doing a, you know, concentration and entrepreneurship. The professor's never been a freaking entrepreneur. Like,
I went to a college like that. Yes.
Yeah. Like when I was in college, I went up to him and I was like, oh, you know, you're an economics professor. Like, what did you do in economics? They went to college, they got the PhD, and then they started teaching. And I'm like, you never did the thing you're teaching, you know? And I think that that's a big reason why we're seeing a huge shift out of getting your knowledge from a traditional 4-year, which I will say this, I think there are some huge benefits to certain groups of going there. I just think that a lot of times that you need to be much more cognizant of less the name on the place you're going and more on how you receive that knowledge. Because I literally saw a post the other day talking about these medical schools in the Caribbean. The average class size was like 700 people.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, what? Like, yeah, that's who I want working on me, circling back around to cardiology. Yeah, I want the dude who sat in class with 700 people who they never actually, you know, they had a clicker to find out if you were present, you know, and Jimmy's running the scam in the background, you know, because he's got 35 clickers, you know, to make sure nobody had to go. Totally knew somebody who did that.
I believe it. I believe it, absolutely.
It's, you know, and I think that's where part of that dilemma comes in, is that anytime you make it easier for somebody to flex their morals, they will. And I think, but along the same lines, people that are on the receiving end of it, it takes a little while to get used to it, but then all of a sudden people get savvy to it. Like what I said with online bullying and stuff like that. Oh, there's people now that are really good at figuring out where that person lives and whatever is just showing up to their workplace going, do you know your employee on company time did this? Do you really want them working for you? And then they get fired. You know, it's like there's all sorts of stuff like that, or, you know, people notifying family members. It's like, you know, your kid does this. You know, like, I think there's always like a rebound little bit. You know, we're even seeing that with social posts, with the automations to find out if that social post was made by AI or not. You know, same thing. You know, it takes a little bit to get over the hill, but now we're seeing a lot of it.
I think overall, as I listening and thinking, I love this conversation, but what it strikes like to me is that the moment we want to shortcut authenticity is when we run into problems. Whether that's no matter where we're talking, whether that's in creating courses, whether that's in teaching, or even with social media engagement. You know, I get it a lot, and people are like, why don't you just automate some of your responses? Because I literally spend hours a day responding to people on social media. And I'm like, because that's not authentic. Do I use AI to help me respond? Absolutely I do. Especially if somebody, you know, you've probably got them too. You get 3 pages worth of stuff in an instant message. And you're like, I don't have time to read all that. So ChatGPT, tell me what this said. So do I use it? Absolutely. But I also know people, some peers of mine, that have literally started using it to respond. And they don't even do it anymore. It's literally just, read the response, send it to ChatGPT, send it back. And to me, and I'm not, do your own thing, it's fine, but to me, that removes all that authenticity. And I'm convinced, and I hope I'm right because I put a lot of time into it, that a year from now, I'll still have a large following and more people because of that authenticity. And most of the people trying to shortcut it are going to be sitting on the sidelines going, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, nobody listened to me anymore. And it's because they weren't doing anything themselves. What are your thoughts when it comes, because that's really a big part, I think, of coaching and AI and consulting and AI and all that. What are your thoughts as you look into the future? My crystal ball's a little cracked and I'm very opinionated. So, of course, I like what I've decided. But what do you see happening in there with that ability to automate so much of that communication? How do you think that's going to impact these influencers in particular?
Well, one thing I do love about our conversations is you and I both have like an archive of like soapboxes we like to stand on.
I've worn out so many of them, and
I think that's one of the things that in particular, and it circles around to being in the you know, if you're going to be in the expert space, whether it be selling courses, workshops, memberships, coaching, consulting, whatever it is, you have to be willing to have that armor of being polarizing. And this is one of the things that just irks the crap out of me. And there's several people with much larger followings than me, but they don't get it in the ethical way I like. Is you can be polarizing without being confrontational.
You
can voice your opinion. Cause like, for example, there are several, like for example, most people on a podcast right now would drop several names of a couple of these big gurus. I'm not going to. I'll say, look in your newsfeed. They got millions of followers. And they polarize by saying, this is the way to grow a business. You have to grind it out, give so many years, and, you know, 12, 15 hours a day. To heck with growing a family. Just grow your business, make your bread, do all that later. I 100% don't agree with that. Also, what does that say to the people who have a family and stuff like that? Basically saying, you're screwed, you're too late, bug off. That's ultimately what's happening. And I think the big thing is, you know, when you're going down these rabbit holes, you do need to be polarizing. But you can do it in a way that's gracious and can be helpful to your audience. And
yes. As far as 100%.
And as far as creating your voice and using AI and stuff like that, we use it in some automations to that we'll get asked the same questions over and over again. My answer is not going to change. Okay, do I have a button that will autofill that response? Heck yes. Did I compose that original one? Yes. You know, we run ads. If somebody messages us, we'll give them the freebie. You know, we'll give them, you know, whatever the thing is we said the ad would have. And then, you know, it's followed up on, you know, with, hey, you know, did you check it out?
Is that cool? And why wouldn't we do that? I mean, I do that all the time. Yeah. You know, I just did a post yesterday about a lead magnet that I put out. I created a custom GPT that was designed to be a lead magnet. I gave it away for free. I'd have to look at the numbers, but somewhere, I want to say around 4,000 or 5,000 people that signed up for it right away. I could be wrong, so if I'm wrong, bear with me on the numbers. But it was thousands of people in 2 weeks that took advantage of it. I didn't, and my assistant didn't take the time to do that. We set up an automation through our marketing automation software that said, okay, when Josh comes in and gives us his email address, you then send that email a link with the link to the custom GPT. And then, did I write some follow-up emails that we sent everybody? I sure did. And some of those people chose to reach out and some of those didn't. And in fact, most of them didn't. That's okay. That's all fine. That I see is different. And maybe I'm being two-faced, but like you said, I wrote those emails. I created those emails. Now I'm just using an automation system to go, if this, then that. That's it.
Yeah.
I see that as entirely different as somebody maybe on their Facebook or their Instagram feed or their YouTube channel, taking the comments that come in and literally funneling them to ChatGPT and just letting ChatGPT answer them and then funneling them back. I see that, to me, that's two totally, entirely different things.
Yeah, if you're training it in your voice to then act autonomously on your behalf, that's a different different than using it as a tool. Using it as an assistant, you know, because we have the same thing. Like, I literally cannot monitor my inbox all day. Also, for me, I realized I really don't want to look at the comments and stuff like that when we run ads, because you know, it's just not good for my mindset on there. I still occasionally see someone like, I don't know what it was.
110%.
One ad, I got called a clown like 5 times in a row by different people. I'm like, okay, sure. I don't know. I got called Diddy too. I don't know what that was about. I'm like, obviously.
But there's always people trying to make problems. You know, I mean, you and I know that.
Yo, 100%.
You have to. I've gotten to the point that I tell everybody that doesn't like what I did or wants to pick on me to be that wants to be that online bully. Hey, you may not realize it, but I'm really appreciating you. Thank you, left this comment, because the algorithm doesn't know you're a jerk. Oh, I leave off that last little jerk part, but, you know, thanks. You're helping the algorithm. You're helping.
You're nicer than I am. I would have put that on there.
It's hard not to.
On that is, have the day you deserve.
Oh, I may have to use that. I like that.
The passive burn of it makes him think for a second. Like, what? Hold on. Wait. No. Damn it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go back to something you said, because I think this would be a good place to kind of bring the plane in for a landing. And you talked about you have to take a strong position. Yeah. To me, it reminds me of a saying I used to use, which was, you need to be outrageous in what you say. And yeah. what I found was interesting is most people got that confused with offensive. And there's a massive difference between being outrageous mm-hmm. and being offensive. In fact, yes. you can be outrageous without being offensive. Something that maybe as a society we've lost. That's another soapbox I won't hop on at the moment. But
yeah, that's a whole other perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we could do a few of them, I think.
We'll do that
but
one later.
From my perspective, it is important because there is so much noise out there. You've yeah. got to be unique and be outrageous in some aspects, even if that means you're boring. I had to do it the other day. OpenAI announced the O3 version, which is supposedly going to achieve AGI. And I have peers all over going, it's here, it's here, it's here. And I'm like, pardon my French, it is not. Mm-hmm. First of all, we can't define it. So you can't achieve something that can't be defined yet, or at least hasn't been defined,
yep.
because we can't do it. Second of all, they haven't released anything. They've just told us they're going to release something. And yeah. Google's been through this, and OpenAI has been through this, and Anthropic's been through this. Everybody's been through this, promising something that may or may not ever happen in the future.
Yeah.
And yet I've got peers that are going, oh, this is why you need to pay attention to me, because I'm the one telling you this. And I'm the one in the background going, yeah, BS.
Shenanigans.
But I can do that. I can do that in a way that's yeah. outrageous by basically, and it is outrageous because the industry seems to be falling head over feet for, it's like, you know, it's like a teenage girl for the Backstreet Boys. When I was yeah. growing up, they're just falling head over heels for these things. And I'm like, stop, use your head for just a moment here, guys.
Yeah.
They announced something that hasn't even been released. They've announced something that doesn't exist yet, as far as we know, because we can't see it. And they're claiming to have achieved something that nobody's defining, including the person who's claiming to have done it. Logic yeah. says that there's a few gaps here we need to fill in. Mm-hmm. So I think you can be outrageous even if you're boring. And I'm saying in this case, I'm the one being boring, going, no, we're not achieving AGI yet. That's not where we're at. But I can be outrageous by the fact that I can, hopefully respectfully, I'm not offending people, I'm not calling out some of my peers who I disagree with and going, oh, they made a mistake, they're an idiot. No, I'm just saying, guys, look at it in a different tone. And yeah. I think that's been very different than what other people have done. So to yeah. me, that's an example of being outrageous without being offensive. What are your thoughts on that as we kind of bring this plane in for a landing?
Yeah, one of my
not on my comments so much as no. the concept of outrageous versus offensive.
I think part of it is, I think when people try to be polarizing, it's easier to be offensive. Mm. It's, you know, it's easier to poke at somebody and go, they're a doofus. Ha ha. Like, if you don't think like me, you're obviously a moron.
Yeah.
Like, that's yeah. the easy route. And that's why so many people go that route, is it's easier just to go, ha ha, look at that numbskull. You know, anybody yeah. that doesn't think like me is a moron. And what I like to do, and again, it takes a little more finesse to do it, mm-hmm. is I like to guide that person to that thought and then let them connect the dots. Because they're going to connect them any which way they want. Like, I'll give it an example. We like to use the word ethical in a lot of our marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You can interpret that many ways. And it could True. Be that I'm an ethical person. I want to follow the way Josh says to build knowledge products. Cool. Somebody else who's been messed over by some online guru can take that as, I don't want to be that guy or that girl.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I'm now able to hit them, and I can say, hey, they got success, but it's the harder way, in my opinion. Why don't you try it this way? You know, like mm-hmm. we had some posts talking about, I like to do MVP, minimum viable product, for most people yes. getting started. I am a fan of simplifying everything as much as humanly possible. You know,
100%.
Yeah, so I said, like, hey, the gurus are right. It worked for them, but it's not the only path. Mm-hmm. What if you wanted an easier way? Because, like, my whole business runs off, like, 3 sales funnels.
Okay.
Total. I love that. And most of them are 1 to 2 steps. That's how I start everybody. It's like, okay, I'm not saying the other person isn't wrong, because obviously they have some numbers, they can prove it. I'm just going to say, I don't agree with them as easy as it is. Come have a chat with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's ways of doing that. And there's different people. And a lot of them I respect. I have several people I respect wholeheartedly. And they have amazing business. They've helped a lot of people. But it's not the path I want to do. So just don't think that if you're trying to grow your personal brand or your business or your movement or whatever it is, you have to hop up on a soapbox and start throwing rocks. You can hop on that same soapbox and point the way you want them to go. You can do it that way. And for me, that's the way that my barometer likes, because I've now been in this game since 2017. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody who is a direct enemy of me. I'm sure there might be somebody who's smoldering somewhere who didn't appreciate something I said, or the guy who said I was a clown. But after checking out his social, he has some other things that he needs to handle first. But ultimately, you can still grow an amazing business, do it ethically, without having to stand up there and beat on your chest saying, I'm so amazing, look at my Lambos, and not having to throw stones at people from your soapbox. You can guide them along the way, do it in your own way. You just have to get it out there and consistently and be willing to know your knowledge is valuable, and people should at some point compensate you for that experience and knowledge. It is not unethical to ask for money to learn what your magic tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where so many people have that head trash.
No, it's so true. Well, and you also mentioned the word, we've got to do this again, Josh, but consistency. I think as a influencer, that's the other thing that so many post. You know, I talked to somebody today, and like I last week I put up 3 social media posts and nobody did anything. This stuff doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, so do that 3 times a day for an entire year, making sure, by the way, you're not promoting yourself, but you're literally adding value to your audience. Don't promote, oh, buy my course, do this. Just add value. Do that for a year and then tell me it didn't work. Yep. Of course, the response that I get from everybody is, well, that's a lot of work. Oh, no kidding.
Welcome to business.
This is why not everybody's successful, you know? It's like, duh. So, I think that's a great way to add in that.
Yeah, and that's I love your point of pointing out the fact of most people there, because we live in a society now where people love immediate gratification. I literally, since this is being recorded just before Christmas, is, you know, they're doing 2-hour deliveries right now.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm like, first of all, wow, the logistics of that is impressive. I'm just like, whoa, that's cool. I kind of want to order something to see if it actually happens. I'm going to order something completely random. But the big thing I tell people is have a plan. And I am Mr. ADD. Like, I am so far on the spectrum. It's incredible. Is that have some waypoints to let you know you're doing it. And have a formula. Like, I tell a lot of my clients, I was like, okay, just commit to 1 time a day for a month. And even if it's just Monday through Friday, that you post 5 times a week. And you do 4 that are value. 1, that's a pitch of something.
There
could be a lead magnet, could be a workshop, could be to buy something. Do 4 and 1. And just see what happens. And then you're going to start seeing that growth. It takes time. And one thing that somebody told me a long time ago is that, like, you're going to see a lot of businesses, they're fireworks.
Yep.
They ramp up quick, boom, pretty at the top, but then can they go anywhere? Nope, they crash.
Mm-hmm.
Solid businesses that go the distance, they don't take off quickly. They aren't necessarily that flashy, but they go really far and they're able to carry a lot more. I'd rather build an airplane than a firework.
Oh, all day long, every day. I think that's just huge wisdom. Huge wisdom.
And that's one thing that's one thing with like consistency of social post. And, you know, I also love paid traffic. Like, do a paid traffic strategy that is sustainable. You know, like almost anybody can get into paid traffic, at least in some way. You know, when they're ready for that, you know, and I think when you start realizing the long game, but have shorter, I call them waypoints, that you can tell, like, okay, you know, first hurdle is here. I'm going to post for 30 days. I'm going to make 6 offers, and I'm going to try to up my following by this. Oh, and I'm going to get 1 client. Okay.
Yes.
Next month, I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm going to add some weekend post, and I'm going to go for 2 clients. Like, mm-hmm. is that rapid growth? No. But does it start adding up really quickly? Yes.
Well, and it doesn't disappear. Like you said, it's not that firework that goes boom and then is gone and is nobody's like, whoa, I remember that. That was pretty cool. But it's literally gone because nobody can remember it anymore.
Exactly.
Well, Josh, as we bring the plane in for landing here, if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Josh?
Easiest way for me is on every social platform out there. I'm JK Brown Official. That's the easiest way to find me everywhere.
Awesome. I love it. Super easy, super effective. Guys, I want to encourage you, if you're in that coaching space, that consulting space, that influencer, or if you just want to figure out how to get there, follow Josh, listen to what he's talking about. He knows his stuff, and it's so important. I think even more important in 2025, I really believe that personal branding, the things we're talking about here, leveraging your knowledge is going to become so much more important because so many people are going to try to take the easy way out and ask ChatGPT. And I think there's going to be a huge draw, just like there is for personal one-on-one meetings now with Zoom being so effective. I think we're going to see a huge draw for people that actually want to reach out to somebody that does have a clue and can back it up with experience. So, Josh, thanks so much for your time. Absolute pleasure. We definitely need to do this more. I think we've got plenty of soapboxes we haven't pulled out yet that we could. Would love to do that. It'd be fun. I want to thank you guys for watching. It's been absolutely amazing to have you here. If you like the podcast, give us a thumbs up. Let us know. If you've got guests you'd like us to interview, let us know as well. That's how we meet some of these amazing people. Make it a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.